Hey everybody, thanks for tuning in. The next 10 minutes of your worry-free life are inspired by a failed educational policy and a cranky student in my class. I hope you enjoy it. Welcome to the engine. It's very difficult to actually teach somebody something valuable. And I mean, this is not an unfamiliar concept to anyone. I mean, the best things in life are hard to get, fine, whatever. But what I mean is, it's very difficult to teach them anything valuable from like a mathematics or a grammar standpoint. And I'll give you an example. Everybody knows that in standard math textbooks, when they teach you a concept, they give you a lot of practice. Okay, and what they do is they'll have a basic algebra expression or a basic addition or subtraction, right? And you have to do, remember, multiplication tables or addition tables, and they have you do these things over and over and over. So you might get the concept of 7 plus 3 is 10 very quickly, but then they want you to do it like 100 or 200 or 300 times. And that's the nature of the educational format for Kumon. Kumon is a tutoring center and education center, and they just have you do thousands and thousands of problems over and over and over, super basic stuff. What they're hoping to do is essentially get it to be muscle memory, right? You don't even think about it. You look at something and boom, you invest zero thought. Now you can do that with somebody. I mean, you can't do it with everyone, but you can try to do it with people. The problem is it doesn't really teach them applied understanding or critical thinking. Because again, the other thing that basic math books do is they give you 30, 40, 50 problems that are very straightforward. And then at the end, they always give you one or two word problems. And I've never worked with a student that said, I love word problems. Everybody hates word problems because students get very adept at doing this one thing over and over and over. It's like, move your right arm, move your right arm, move your right arm. Well, that's all well and fine. But can you move your right arm in just the right way in the middle of a water polo game and score a goal? The actual movement is very basic. But doing it at the right time in the right way is very difficult. It's the same thing with math. You might understand basic algebra concepts or basic, you know, fractions or something like that. But in a word problem, things get very, very tricky. Now, this is very common in math to try to get students to critically work through problems. That's why the nature of a word problem is this cliche torture device. But people have been trying to do this in basic English and history classes for a long time. In fact, in the 70s and 80s, there was this really big push to educate the U.S. population in critical thinking. How can we get people to think deeply and meaningfully about concepts? And it's the difference between just telling somebody what happened in a historical event. Okay, so on a test, they can regurgitate exactly what happened. And then maybe asking them, why do you think that was good or bad? And then you have to come up with a different type of answer. You're not just saying, look, this happened and this happened. You're like, well, perhaps it was short-sighted, or perhaps it was genius because then this happened. But you have to engage the problem in a deep way. And you see this obviously in debate clubs. And you see it where people are writing persuasive essays. They have to come up with reasons that their position is correct. And that's all well and fine. But it turns out it's incredibly hard to do. It's incredibly hard to teach people these skills because the nature of teaching, quote, critical thinking is just very elusive. How do you get somebody to do this? Well, one way it turns out is arguing. Right. And if you can argue with somebody effectively, well, that's a valuable thing. If you can argue with them and not insult them, if you can argue with them and not, you know, just say that their argument's trash, like if you can do all of these things, don't throw in non sequiturs, like if you can argue effectively, then that's a good thing. And you can kind of think a little bit better. It's kind of like practice for thinking. This girl in my class, she's great, but she always wants to argue with me. Her name's Ani. I really enjoy her in my class, but I find myself getting derailed with her at times because I'll say something that just seems so obvious and so evident, and everyone agrees with me. And she'll just kind of wait. She won't really say one thing or another thing. And then right as we're about to move on, she's like, well, what do you mean? And I'll have to start talking to her about it on a deeper level. Say, well, this is what I'm saying. She's like, well, how do you know that? That's not true. And oh my God, it took me back. It took me back to when I was in high school, because I would ring my teachers just all day long. They couldn't get away from me. They couldn't stop me from arguing with them in physics or math or whatever. I remember arguing with my geometry teacher about having a triangle with two sides that are smaller than the third side. And she told me that could never exist. Two sides of a triangle always have to be larger. I'm like, well, what do you mean? It could never exist. Could it ever? She's like, if you got it, you'd win the Nobel Prize for math. And that doesn't even exist, but they'd give it to you. I was like, wah. I was 14. I didn't care. Then I was arguing with my physics teacher about turning a bicycle or a motorcycle. She said, look, if you're on a bicycle riding straight, if you want to turn left, you have to turn your wheel to the right. You have to turn your handlebars to the right first, so you lean left. Like, that's not true. I'm sure I couldn't. Like, we go back and forth. He'd always have to write on the test, hey, look, what's the speed of this excluding air friction? Because if he didn't say excluding air friction, I would always say, well, you're not taking into account the fact that wind slows people down, air slows people down. And we would go back and forth. And then I would go on to college, and I studied rhetoric, and all we did in the rhetoric department was argue with each other. We'd read these very dense, intense philosophical pieces, and we just argue about them, going back and forth and finding little nuances or little setups you could trip somebody up on. Arguing and thinking became very, very second nature to me. And I was recently having this small argument with Ani. And again, I don't think of it like an argument. I like this student. I have no problem with her at all. And I always get a laugh when somebody tries to come really strong with something, when some student really tries to challenge me. And I realized with her recently, she doesn't even disagree with me. It's like she's flirting with the argument. She's dipping her toe into this venue where she's like, look, let's see if your thoughts can beat my thoughts. And I was having this discussion with her about something. I can't even remember what it was. And I was like, oh my God, she's trying to get me to help her practice. She's trying really hard to pull me into this debate where I realized she didn't even care one way or another. She wanted the sport of it. And I saw that and I instantly stopped. I'm like, oh God, this is great. This is someone trying to turn their brain online. And of course, I did exactly what you think. I instantly got after it. And from that point on, when I was working with her, whenever she would start arguing with me, I would take as much time as it needed. And again, it didn't take 10, 20 minutes and we were in class, but I'd stop for a couple minutes and go back and forth with her. And I'd always essentially just pin her into a corner because, let's face it, I'm good at arguing. I'm pretty quick thinking on my feet and I have a couple years on her. But I always leave the door open for her to come back. I always encourage her to keep coming forward. Because I think in Ani's case, and I think for most students, when they try to start practicing this, when they try to start coming strong with an idea or a thought, not defending themselves, I'm not talking about them being really upset about something and some teachers is telling them they're stupid. I'm talking about people who are almost looking at it as just arguing for sport, because it's an engagement of thought. It's polishing your ability in this way. And I realize, especially in my life, I've only had a couple adults who were willing to engage with me in this way. I've only had a couple adults who were willing to sit down and kind of, in a playful, almost playful way, talk through ideas. I have an uncle who's great at it. My physics teacher, he would actually take the time and talk to me about different things. But the majority of adults don't want to do that. They don't want to engage on that level. They don't want to address different issues. A lot of people can't even talk about things inconsequential because they get too upset. If the conversation goes beyond 30 seconds where one person still doesn't agree with the other, they just say, forget it. But in Ani's case, if people don't engage her, how is she going to learn to think critically? How is she going to sharpen her knife? How are any of these students going to be able to actually think through things unless they engage deeply and meaningfully with someone else who can return the volley? It's no good to have an argument with somebody who just collapses. And it's also no good to try to have an argument or a discussion with somebody who's either far superior or unwilling to have the discussion. You need two willing parties. You need two willing parties. And usually, you need one that's a little bit better than the other. Because then the argument doesn't get out of control. It doesn't get out of hand. I mean, people kind of like knowing where they are. So, if we want to teach our students to think critically, if we want to help them engage ideas and thoughts on a deep level, we are going to have to do the thing that we really don't like doing. We're going to have to argue with them. We're not going to get to tell them, that's the way it is because I say so. That does nothing for critical thinking. That does nothing for improving the student. That does nothing for thought. It's literally saying, stop using your brain. That's all it's saying. That's all it's saying. It's this way because that's what I say. What good is that? What good is that? Now, look, I have kids. I understand at some point you just can't keep talking to people, right? Especially to like a 6-year-old or an 8-year-old that's just going, you can't keep talking to them. But when we're talking about young adults, when we're talking about people that we're about to send out into the world, 16, 17, 18-year-olds, if we as parents and educators are not putting up our best effort to engage their thought processes and allow them to come back and forth with us and dig into ideas and find the right way to think. And let's be clear, there's a right way to think. There are plenty of wrong ways. Just saying somebody's wrong because they're an idiot or because they're dumb or because they're mean, that is not the right way to think. Getting somebody to admit that they're wrong based on the strength of your ideas, that's a pretty damn good way to think. And again, I get it. It's hard. It's tiring. It's not something that you want to do at the end of a day. But if you want Ani and other students like her to go out into the world and at the very least have a set of tools to engage the onslaught of stimulus that they will experience, engage the onslaught of stimulus in a positive, meaningful way, you're going to have to argue with them. You're going to have to argue. You're going to have to be patient. You're going to have to be open to being wrong, but you're going to have to argue. And you're going to have to embody the thought process that you would want them to use. It's not entertaining, always. But look, they tried this in the 70s and 80s. And I think the failure of most educational systems is that they didn't allow themselves the vulnerability of engaging meaningfully and deeply with a younger person. You have to present yourself for all of your flaws if you're going to have a real argument. Because guess what? 16 and 17 and 18-year-olds aren't dumb. and they may actually get you. So be ready for that. Be ready to perhaps be wrong. Be ready to perhaps get caught flat-footed. But then, you don't have to worry. Because you'll know that kid has a really, really good head on her shoulders. And on that note, thanks for listening. Go out and crush it.